Tema Talks is brought to you by the Tema Contour Memorial Trust, which is Canada's leading provider of peer support, family assistance, education and training for emergency services, public safety, military personnel, and their families. Check out tema.ca for more information. The views, opinions, and endorsements expressed in each podcast episode are those of the host and the guest alone and do not necessarily reflect the official position of the Tema Contour Memorial Trust. The subject matter of this podcast may be triggering for some listeners. Please take the time to get yourself in a calm and positive mind space before listening so you can get the most out of the podcast. Okay, cue the music and enjoy this episode of Tema Talks.
Hello, people, and welcome to Tema Talks, episode 17. So this episode wasn't supposed to happen until September. As I told you, I was taking July and August off. Well, I changed my mind, and we're going to put out a couple in the summer. One in July, this one, and one more in August. We're going to put out, and here's my plan. Obviously, both of them are going to have a fantastic guest. And in recent months, I think that we've just been inundated with losing people, whether it's, you know, just in general, first responders, close family and friends, celebrities, you know, losing them to suicide. It certainly has been a headline issue these last few months. So this is going to be the Tema Talks summer of support. So what we're going to do, we're going to have a guest, as I said, but then what we're going to do is I've gone back and I've consolidated. In each episode this summer, there's going to be 12 messages of support taken from past episodes that are just going to be in rapid-fire succession, just for you to hear many messages of support in case you are struggling or know someone that is, just to prove the point, to drive the point home that you are not alone, I am not alone. We can get through those down times, those dark times, the times where it seems like there is no path out, no open door. I'm telling you, there is. There always is. I've been there. I've been searching for that door and almost came to the point where I've said there is no door. You know, it's done. But there's a door. There always is. So that's the plan for the summer. I think you will enjoy it. I hope you guys are all enjoying your summer, taking time to enjoy the outdoors. That's very important. I've found lately being outside more and being in the sun more really has made a huge impact on my mindset and how I feel. It's massive. I know we hear it all the time, but it is true. Sunshine, it is medicine. So use it. It's out there. Okay, my guest this episode, you may have seen on social media lately in the news, Jenny Mignot. She's on a tour of various cities in Canada and communities advocating for veterans with PTSD and also advocating for the support of the loved ones who care for them. Really, really important. Jenny has an awesome story to tell, and she's taken up a really important cause, and you're going to hear all about it. I really enjoyed this. That's why I sort of came out of my summer vacation as I saw this article on Facebook. And I said, we got to get this lady on, and since she's in the middle of her tour right now, I'm not going to wait to put it out. We're going to put it out now. So that's how it happened. That's how it went down. Love this chat. I hope you enjoy it. Let's get to it.
It was a dark and stormy night, nor'easter rolling in.
Welcome to Tema Talks, Jenny. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Sean.
It's my pleasure. As I was saying to you earlier before we started, my plan was to take the summer off, July and August. However, I saw a story about you, an an article on Facebook about you and what you're doing, and it's so important what you're doing. So I had to reach out to you. We need to get this done, and we're going to put this out. So, you know, plans change, which is great.
Thank you, because you know that pain never actually takes a break, right?
So it doesn't. It
summer
doesn't
is actually a great time. It's always a good time to talk about the needs of caregivers. Always.
Oh, absolutely.
We must not be forgotten.
Yeah, you know what? And you're so right. And before we get into the meat of it, like I had an earlier guest on. Her name is Tara Collins. I don't know if you've met her or talked to her or not. If not, I should really hook you up with her. She is someone else who came out. She had a husband that was in the military and went through some of the same things that you did. And she's speaking out about, you know, caregiver trauma, secondary trauma, just the toll that it takes. And what she said to me, and I don't know if you've heard this or not, but I wanted to tell you this, that unpaid caregivers account for 75% of care provided to people at home. So basically family members. That's 8 million people in Canada are caregivers. Mm-hmm. You know, and this is only going to, those numbers are only going to go up. It's just astounding.
Yep.
You know, and
yep.
Certainly something that we have to pay attention to. So before we get into it, go ahead.
If you allow me just to add something on that. It's important when we talk about caregivers of the military and the veterans, it is important because we are sort of the federal voice.
Sure.
And our battle concerns every single provinces in this country.
Absolutely. No, you're totally right.
So, absolutely.
So, Jenny, before we get into what you're doing, I want to know a little bit about you because I really don't know anything about you. So just tell us about you, where you grew up, and that kind of stuff.
This is the best story ever because I was born in Quebec.
Okay.
So I guess you can hear it in my accent, of course.
I can.
I was born in Quebec, and I'm not coming from a military family at all. Hmm. In fact, I was born in Sainte-Cécile-de-Masham, born and raised there. So, and there was no military in my family. Hmm. And what can I say? Just had a normal childhood.
Yeah.
And one day, out of nowhere, there's a man, I'm an employment consultant.
Okay.
And a colleague of mine, I'm then 29 years old, and a colleague of mine comes to my office and asks me if I could meet someone who's looking forward to participate in two workshops in order to help him get a job.
Okay.
That person was my ex-husband. When I was introduced to him, he was a fairly new veteran, only 2 years out of the service.
Right.
And already he was struggling to find a job, keep a job. He didn't know what he wanted to do in the civilian world.
Right.
So this is how I met him.
Wow.
And
so
I
don't mean to interrupt you. So you met him after he was out of the military. And
yes,
was he already having some issues then? Was he having problems then?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, as I said, I was a civilian myself.
Yeah.
And I knew nothing about the military. Nothing. All the judgment, especially in Quebec, and we have a perspective about the military service, which is very different from the rest of Canada. And to me, I met an ex-military. So I wasn't even able to recognize his service and his culture.
Right.
You understand? And the person that he was. To me, he was a civilian who happened to be at one point a military.
Wow. See, the reason I brought that up, Jenny, is because to your credit, it's not like you were in this relationship, you were in this marriage, and your partner got sick or started to have trouble. You met this person and embraced this person and took this on when it was already happening.
It was happening. It was already there when we met. Okay, already he was having terrible nightmares.
Okay.
But you know what? To me, they were nightmares just like for a child.
Okay.
You understand?
Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't taken, of course, because when he left the military, when he left his service after 20 years, in fact, he explained to me later on in our marriage that he left because he was ashamed, because he felt like he wasn't good enough for the uniform he was wearing so proudly. Oh. Wow. So it was like a shame for him, and that's why he retired. But he was already sick, and already his medical files were indicating major depression, and everything was there, in fact. But the Canadian Armed Forces let him go, telling him that he was in perfect health.
Wow. How are they justifying that? Like, were they totally disregarding the emotional or mental?
Oh, absolutely. In 1998, right, after he served 17 consecutive months in Haiti.
Wow.
So he came back psychologically wounded, of course.
Right.
And when he had the opportunity, everybody just watch him go. Hey, bye-bye, goodbye, have a good life. So he was under the impression that he was okay, although he knew that there was something wrong with him. But he didn't want to admit it to himself, right?
Mm.
And not to himself and not to anybody else. So he was fighting those nightmares. Now that I know, because back then I couldn't see and I couldn't realize. I mean, he was hypervigilant. I mean,
right,
all the signs were there, but I couldn't recognize them.
Hmm.
So, you know, we fell in love. We got married,
yeah,
1 year after we met.
Yeah.
So he was wounded, but nobody knew. So he did find jobs, 15 within 3 years.
Wow.
He couldn't keep them. He was always angry, always got not into a fight, but, you know, verbal,
right,
situations. They weren't efficient enough, not good enough, not fast enough. Everybody was incompetent around him.
Right.
So at one point, his brother told him about Veterans Affairs. So we got married in 2002, and now it's in 2006, I believe, he contacted Veterans Affairs, and he finally received a diagnosis in 2007 with among other things, of course, PTSD.
Right. Well, I have a question, Jenny. Why did it take somebody else to tell him about Veterans Affairs? No one from the military tell him that he had a support system in Veterans Affairs?
No. In 98, like, seriously. It took Romeo Dallaire, actually, to talk about PTSD, right?
Yeah. Wow,
I mean,
that shocks me.
Before him, nobody was really talking about PTSD.
Right.
And you weren't treated? I mean, no, nobody knew about it.
But he didn't even know that Veterans Affairs was an organization that he could turn to for any kind of support.
Exactly.
Wow. Okay.
So the lack of information really impacted, of course, but then again, he wasn't able to recognize for himself that he was wounded.
Right. And it didn't help that the military was also saying he wasn't, which gave him an excuse to say, well, I'm not.
And you don't want to be also, right?
Right, right.
I mean, when you're military, you don't want to be sick, and you don't want to leave sick. You don't want to leave wounded.
Right.
You don't want to be wounded. It's not acceptable.
Yeah. No, I can understand
It's that. Not acceptable.
So you guys you guys brought your families together, which included altogether 4 children.
Yeah, you had 2.
Right.
I had 2.
So you're going through this.
And, God.
I'm
thinking
it
about
you?
It now, 15 years later. And
yeah.
Oh, my God. There was passion between my ex-husband and I, because today we are divorced. I guess we'll talk about it a little bit later
for sure.
on. But
yeah.
What really saved us was the passion that we felt one for another.
Right.
Okay, this passion, this sexual attraction too, okay, we have to be honest here.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, really, this is what kept our marriage for a very long time, and that made us still continue like to love each other.
Right.
Although there was a lot of fighting.
Yeah.
At one point he was heavily drinking. Okay. And with all the drinking, you know what comes with it, right? The fighting. I had a job. It was difficult for me to keep a job because on top of it, he was experiencing nightmares.
Right.
And when he started to get the help, the medication came also in the picture.
Right.
And heavy meds. Huh. So the big drama for me in my life was the fact that I was completely ignored in the process. So nobody to begin with, and of course we're in 2018 today, and things did change a little bit. Okay, right. So it's not the same thing, but in my situation, nobody explained to me what was PTSD. Nobody told me that his military service was a reality and was part of him.
Right.
Okay, and yeah. It's obvious to me today, but back then, I would have appreciated someone like explaining to me what I was confronting.
Hmm.
And the nature of the wound that my husband was suffering from.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
No help, no support, no recognition. 6 years seeing a psychiatrist every 6 weeks.
Every six weeks.
He would come back with a new prescription of, you know, a little bit more of this, a little bit less of that, and let's take a new pill and let's...
So this is one appointment every 6 weeks.
One appointment every 6 weeks.
Wow.
And during 6 years, nobody, the psychiatrist, never met me.
Hmm.
Never met me to ask me what was going on. If he was doing okay with the meds. If I had any question, anything.
Wow.
So I was like completely out of the loop of support that was in place for him.
Right.
Supposedly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I was completely ignored. Now, I mean, but it's so more than just being ignored, because being ignored means that you are left alone dealing with the collateral damage that is happening in the house.
Mm-hmm.
So there's so much energy wasted, like trying to protect the children.
Right.
You know, being stuck between one because you see and you know. Okay, why? Like, I knew why my ex-husband was reacting. And at some point, I agreed with the fact that he didn't agree with what was going on.
Yeah.
But I couldn't agree with his reaction and the way he was expressing his anger.
Right.
So it created a lot of tension.
Hmm.
A lot of tension. And because, of course, with his PTSD, what I understood a little bit later on is the fact that, you know, I was becoming an enemy.
Right.
So if I would take the side of the child, I was like, you know, is in me. And it meant that you're always protecting the child.
Yeah.
You're always blah, blah, blah. You're never there for me. So being ignored was meaning that I was left alone with the children, with the alcohol, with the medication, with justifying with the rest of the world that my husband was a good man.
Hmm. Just to separate from what your husband was going through for a second, how did you cope? Like, how did you get through that?
Very badly, actually.
Yeah.
For years, I fought. I fought him. I fought the PTSD.
Yeah.
I fought his reactions. I fought everything because this is the only thing I knew.
Yeah.
Okay, it took me years to realize that I was supposed to be an ally and not an enemy. But it took me years to be able to heal my own wounds. Okay, allowing me like to have a new perspective on his PTSD.
Right.
Because the big drama was that I was seeing everything through my own eyes.
Right. And not his.
Okay, and exactly.
Right.
And this is what I understood much later on. You know, I have to learn who I'm dealing with. Is he the beautiful man I know and love? Is he the military? Meaning that I'm dealing with the guy who is expressing what his military culture told him and taught him.
Right.
In terms of respect, values, and efficiency, and so on, or am I dealing with the PTSD?
Yeah.
And when I'm dealing with the PTSD, and it took me years to be able to realize that, I have to wear a new hat, the caregiver hat.
Right.
And the caregiver hat allows me to protect myself because his words don't affect me. I don't listen to them the same way. I don't hear them the same way. So my response is different.
Who taught you to do that, though? Did you just come up with that yourself?
Yes.
Yeah.
I ended up so alone.
Yeah.
I was either going to commit suicide myself.
Right.
Or I had to find a solution.
Yeah.
You know? And believe me, I went down that road of suffering. I mean,
yeah.
I have scars over my body because I inflicted them myself to myself.
Right.
I felt so damn lonely, so alone. And I loved my husband. But how do you justify this kind of love to the rest of society, to your coworkers at job, to your boss, to your best friends who don't understand why you're staying in that relationship?
Right.
And yet, I always knew the great man who was lying behind his invisible uniform.
Right.
And this is what I held to.
Yeah.
But loving was a big burden also. Not because I didn't love him. I didn't know how to love him. And I was hurting myself by not being an appropriate caregiver.
What do you mean by that?
Because I was, creating situations.
Right.
Let me just give you a very simple example.
Sure.
Okay?
Yeah, absolutely.
So he would go to his psychologist once every week. So us, it meant that he had to drive an hour and a half to get to the specialist, and of course an hour and a half to come back in the traffic and so on, right?
Right.
So at one point, would you believe it, I was kind of almost jealous that he had all this attention, that he had a place he could actually vent and say whatever he wanted. So he would be gone for three hours.
Right.
And when he come back, okay, I would ask, what did you say? You didn't tell this? Did you tell him about this? You didn't. Blah, blah, blah. And I would be on his back.
Right.
Make feel almost guilty.
Hmm.
I was creating situations because, of course, he would get angry.
Right.
He didn't want exactly to tell me. And, of course, I mean, he was right. But I was bitchy when he came back home.
Yeah.
I really was.
Based on true feelings, though. I mean, these are feelings that you weren't trying to harm. You know what I mean? Like, you were, but.
No. But at one point, you need help yourself, right?
Yeah.
And you don't get.
Yeah.
How come he was receiving so much help and not me?
Right.
While I knew everything that was going on in the home, while I knew if he was taking his meds or not,
well, of course,
you know,
yeah.
I knew a lot of things. Hmm. At one point, later on in the process, I finally realized not only with my head, but also and mostly with my heart, what it meant for him to drive an hour and a half, what it meant for him to go see the psychologist because he was anxious before getting there. He never knew what to tell the psychologist.
Right.
When I fully realized what it meant for him, I completely changed my ways. So at one point, I waited for him with a coffee. You know, I changed the way I was welcoming him.
And what did you notice when you did that?
Excuse me?
What did you notice when you did that? Did you notice a difference in how he would react to you?
52 fights that were no more existing in a year.
Huh. Right.
I took that fight away.
Right.
Do you understand what I mean?
Absolutely, yeah.
Because I changed my ways. In fact, he started to tell me more. And because I changed how I listened to him.
Right.
He shared more with me, and I shared more with him, too.
You diffused right? it, is what you did. You diffused the situation.
I learned how to create an appropriate environment for him when I realized that the wound was real.
That's a very selfless thing for you to do, though, for people to do. It takes a lot to do that. It's one thing to know that, and then it's another thing to actually do it. You know?
It takes a lot of maturity. In my world, the way I defined it now, to me, you need maturity and you need empathy.
Right.
You need both. Hmm. And don't confuse empathy with sensitivity. Not the same thing. Empathy and maturity. I need to be able to deal with my own shit.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Before I can deal with this shit, I have to be mature enough to understand what are my triggers, what are my needs.
Right.
And be proactive, because I have a responsibility. As a caregiver, I have a responsibility towards the wounded one, but also towards myself first. And my first responsibility is to heal myself in order to love him correctly.
Right.
Hmm. So the maturity comes with time, right?
Right.
You can't have that maturity, that level of maturity at 21 years old. You can have the empathy.
Right.
But not the maturity. So with time, you know, you grow. And this is what's the most beautiful part about this is that I realized that I really grew myself because of my husband's PTSD.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
I became a better person because of him. And you know what? In the end, him too became a better person also because of me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Jenny,
We had to work very hard in order to be able to achieve that level of empathy thing, you know?
Right.
Because it's difficult for a veteran or a serving member to really feel that empathy too. And this is one of the biggest fights that we have as caregivers, is to be recognized by the person we are taking care of.
Right.
So, we live with someone who can find very difficult to see us, for instance, have a social life or a successful social life.
Right.
Or successful relationship with our family members.
Right.
It's difficult for a wounded veteran with PTSD, for instance, who has very few people around him, of course you're going to see the threats everywhere around the person you love.
Right.
And that's a huge thing to deal with, because you have to fight to have your place regarding your own needs, okay, because you cannot give your entire life to someone who's wounded.
Hmm.
So you have to balance that and find your place and be able to reassure the person who's wounded.
Yeah.
In order for that person to also accept.
Right.
Does it make sense to you?
Yeah, absolutely it does. Yeah. Jenny, when did you make a decision that you needed to do something else about this? That you needed to, that there was a fight that needed to be fought?
I realized that I needed to fight for myself first, I guess, when my father passed from cancer. And at that period, my ex-husband was really affected by medication, and like he would be in bed for something like 20 hours a day.
Right.
So I remember mourning my father, who wasn't dead yet, actually. You know, alone by the fire at our place, I would like just have myself a little bonfire at night. Right. And this is when I sort of realized that I had to take care of me at some level, myself, that I had to stop expecting something else from my ex-husband.
Right.
But it's when I went back to school in social services in order to save whatever was left of my family, because at that point the relationship was terrible between the children and us, and between, you know, my ex-husband and myself. And so I really decided to go back to school, but I only was able to stay at school for 3 months because my place was with my husband, so I had to quit school.
Right.
And this is when I really realized that I was a caregiver. Suddenly, I really realized that PTSD had a grip on me and on my life, that I was not free completely.
Mm. Right.
Okay, so this was like a big thing for me to realize.
Yeah. You made a good...
More importantly...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, you made a really good point about expectations and disappointment. The distance between reality and expectations, mm-hmm, is disappointment. That is the space in the middle. Is how much,
yep,
different, you know, your expectations are from reality. You know, a lot. That's what it is. You know.
And a lot of caregivers, a lot of us, hold on to those expectations,
right,
and then they just won't let go.
Yeah.
They just won't let go.
Hmm.
But this is their own woods talking.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Jenny, when did you decide that you wanted to, like, what made you decide that you wanted to take this message, you know, on this Canada tour, which I know you're doing one now, but originally you did this before, right? This is not your first one.
No, it's not my first one. Well, actually, when my ex-husband and I divorced, like many caregivers, I ended up semi-homeless.
Right.
So I didn't have, of course, the mental health to find a job right after that. There was no way. And I didn't want to be a prisoner of the welfare system, because I was a prisoner for me from the Veterans Affairs system for so long. I needed some kind of freedom.
Right.
To heal. Mm-hmm. So this is when I decided to live in my car and actually travel this country. Because in 2014, I tried to talk to the ex-minister of Veterans Affairs, Fantino, and he ignored me in front of the TV, right? So I was active in the advocacy level, like, since 2014. So in 2016, at the end of our marriage, that is when, and maybe we will talk about it, but
right,
this is when medical cannabis in my ex-husband's life actually freed me from my fear of him committing suicide.
Right.
So I decided to go and meet those who supported me and my fellow, you know, sister caregivers and,
right,
veterans and their families and organization, to have an understanding of the different challenges that veterans and their families are confronted to from a provincial level.
Right.
I wanted to understand more, and it was a great opportunity for me to heal this country made me heal, actually. So this was my first tour. It lasted 6 months. So I really went from Newfoundland to Vancouver Island.
Wow.
Yes. And there's nothing, I keep saying, there's nothing like living 6 months without a flushing toilet, okay, to understand. It brought me actually closer, and I'm saying this in a very humble way, excuse me, but it brought me closer to the military service at some level, okay, because for 6 months living in my car, I had to live in a very, you know, small space.
Right.
I was living in a 2007 Toyota Camry, and I'm 5'4". Still, I didn't fit, you know, on the back seat to sleep.
Right.
So, you know, dealing with the humidity, having to hide my car to sleep.
Right.
You know, just the challenges, the daily challenges of making sure that I had enough clean water and being able to wash myself once every 2-3 days. So it brought me closer to the military service, sort of.
Right.
Made me understand a few challenges. But it also allowed me to meet so many families that it was like the best thing ever, because this is when I really realized that I was not alone. Although I was a Quebecer, and I am a Quebecer, although my English is far from being perfect, you know what? In the end, we all share the same language.
Yeah.
When we talk about PTSD, I mean, it's the same pain. It all leads at the same place. Although every story is different,
right,
and every challenge is different, but the pain is the same for everyone.
Yeah, that's right.
So, with time, the advocacy, the activities, and the political involvement as well, because I met approximately 200 MPs individually.
Really?
Just to raise the awareness, just to talk about, yes. Yes, to me, I had a mission also to educate
Right.
our MPs in order to be able to talk with the veterans, because people don't know how to talk to veterans.
Right.
And I felt like I could maybe contribute to educate some of them in order for them to be better listener and to have a better understanding of what their own people are telling them.
Right.
Because they are the political voice at one point.
Right.
And veterans need to be understood.
And was
from a political level.
Was it your opinion, or like, was it your message that there is just a profound lack of support for veterans? Is that the message you were trying to get out to these MPs?
To the MPs, yes and no.
Yeah.
To be honest, when I met with them, it's them who decided, you know, where the conversation,
right,
where they wanted the conversation to go, right?
Right.
Some of them really had questions for me in terms of the caregiving. Sometimes it was about PTSD. So at that level, my mission was to educate them, okay? But when it comes to Veterans Affairs, you are absolutely right in terms of caregiving and to family members. There's a definite lack of support, lack of services, and the measures that are created for us to, you know, right, supposedly for us are inaccessible for those who are suffering with PTSD. So there's a kind of discrimination within Veterans Affairs concerning the caregivers, because to them, it sounds like from a bureaucratic perspective, a caregiver has to put a spoon in the mouth of someone wounded in order to deserve the title of caregiver.
Right.
But in my world with PTSD,
it doesn't work like that.
Well, as a matter of fact, yes, it does work like that. The only difference is I don't put the spoon in the mouth.
Right.
because I have to bring the food on the table. Yeah. I don't wash him, but I have to ask him to wash himself.
That's right, yeah.
I mean, he's non-functional anyway.
Right.
Either it's physical or mentally speaking, the result is that in the end, he's not as present as a father.
Right.
He's not present as a life partner because everything is so heavy on his shoulder.
Right.
So, I mean, shoveling the snow at 5 a.m. in the morning in order for me to leave and go to my job. No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
So in the end, the caregivers are taking care of everything.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, absolutely they are. So when did this... Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, my point was, what is the difference?
Yeah.
You know, why should I be discriminated either because my husband is from... You know, is under the umbrella of the old pension system or the new veteran charter or the future pension system. I mean, to us, why should it matter?
Right.
Okay?
Yeah, shouldn't.
We're human. We don't belong to a bureaucratic system.
Right.
Our love is not political, and our love, okay, is... doesn't have to be recognized in terms of when he left the army, you know,
yeah.
When did he retire? Before 2006, you don't have access to nothing.
Right.
Between
yeah,
2006
exactly.
and 17, you know, doesn't
yeah.
make sense.
No, it doesn't make
so,
any sense.
The battle of caregivers is about their identity and their dignity through the education, the support, and the recognition. Because what we do is real. Who we are is real. We
right.
are either the best ally or the worst enemy to someone who's suffering.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Tell me about the caregiver recognition benefit. When did this come about?
Okay. When I ran after Minister Fantino in 2014, there was nothing for families. The conservative answer to this, because of course in the media, the minister didn't look so good, neither Veterans Affairs, so they created the caregiver relief benefit. And I always said that this was the most ridiculous measure you can ever think of, because the only thing good about that measure was the $7,238 that was a grant given to the veteran, but check this out. That money was given to the veteran for him to get the services that he needs in order to replace the caregiver when she's away. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, me, that doesn't give me a damn thing, I mean, to
no.
take a break. No money. But more than that, do you really think that I'm going to leave my husband and home and what, me take a weekend off?
Right.
Okay, this can't be done. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's pretty ridiculous.
So now, ridiculous. So
yeah.
Obviously, the liberals heard the fact that it was ridiculous.
Right.
And they changed it. Now, since April 1st, they installed the caregiver recognition benefit. Now, there's a political win in there because this measure gives a monthly payment of $1,000 in the name of the caregiver.
Right.
Okay?
Okay.
But,
yeah.
Guess what? Well, I mean, the veteran has, I mean, if he still has his two legs and his two arms and he can actually feed himself,
right.
Forget it.
Mm.
So, this is very good. Well, okay, if you want, in a way.
It's the right
good.
Idea. It's the right direction.
You got it.
Yeah.
It's the right direction. So, I mean, it's not a compensation. Okay, at one point, it will have to be, if you
right.
ask me. It
yeah.
will have to be a compensation for the transfer PTSD, for the fact that if I really have to quit my job, Forget about all the benefits, you know, the RRSP. Right. And, you know, every contribution that I have to make in order to secure my financial future.
Yeah.
Okay, if I have to stop working,
yeah,
I lose a lot. Okay, I lose a lot. Still, that measure exists, and I'm guessing that it's accessible to those who are physically wounded, and this is excellent, although I know no one who actually is receiving it.
Oh.
But if you live with someone with PTSD, I mean, the criteria, yeah, like, is a fiasco.
Well, it sounds
it's a fiasco.
It sounds to me, Jenny, a lot like what I've observed with whether it be workers' compensation or whether it be the disability tax credit, is that it's all, it's exactly like you said. First of all, it's all based on physical symptoms. What can you, how do you physically get through your day? And if I can get through 5 of 9 physical tasks a day, then I'm not sick enough, you know, basically. I mean, just in general speaking. But they don't take into account how, you know, the anxiety or the emotional or mental injuries that even though I can put on a good front and I can get maybe survive a day and you know, half decently, that doesn't mean that I'm well. It doesn't mean that I don't need help.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, and this is what's missing. The understanding, okay, of the nature of the wound.
Right.
At every single level. Every single level. In the military, it's crazy how they heavily medicate our serving members.
Right.
Crazy, crazy, crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, they keep them zombie. They keep them dead inside.
Right.
Dead inside. So.
Yeah.
And find me a system, okay, where if I, anywhere in this country, you work for 20 years, 25 years, yeah, okay, in the military. As soon as you get out, they push you in order to find a new job. To them, the answer of retirement lies in the employment.
Right. Yeah.
My mother taught for 30 years, and when she retired, no one pushed her for her to find a new job and go no, back to school, and
yeah,
nobody did that.
Why
are we doing
done?
This?
Why can't you be retired? Yeah.
And just accept that there's a price with the service,
right,
and us as a society, we have to accept that price.
That's right. Yeah, no, I agree with that,
okay,
totally. So, just where are you right now, physically?
Right now, I'm in Winnipeg.
Right.
In fact, I'm about to leave in Manitoba. So I stayed almost 2 weeks in Northern Ontario.
Right.
And then Manitoba. I'm
You're
going
on another
to Brandon.
Tour, basically. You started another tour.
Yes.
So what
exactly.
What is
Northern
it you're doing?
Ontario. Well, actually, I'm meeting veterans and their families,
right,
because I still want to understand their challenges from a provincial level, of course. So I'm meeting, you know, Franco-Manitobans and Franco-Ontarians and so it, and the native communities as well.
Right.
Okay. They are forgotten on so many levels. And I'm meeting also organizations to talk about PTSD. I will be meeting with MFRCs in Saskatchewan, Legions. So I'm meeting the actors from a local perspective.
Right.
And, of course, I talk about the new measure of Veterans Affairs concerning the caregivers.
Right.
And because also they need to be educated. And I talk in the media about the lack of services, you know, for caregivers and veterans, because don't forget that when you take away something from a caregiver, okay, there's a price for the veteran who's suffering.
Right.
If I have to quit my job, all the burden goes on the veteran.
That's right.
Okay?
It just makes when it I, makes them I feel quit worse my job, than they already do.
Well, when I quit my job in order to take care of my ex-husband, okay, like, understand that I had my own two children in this marriage, and he had his own two children.
Right.
I was able to pay for my children. I was able to pay for my part of the house we had together.
Right.
I was able to pay for my car payment. When I quit my job, everything came on my ex-husband's shoulder.
Right.
He was the only one receiving money.
Right.
So basically, I mean, he's the one who fed my children.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't contribute anymore. So our dignity is very important. Not because it's a feminist, you know, thing and I'm all angry. No, no, no. It's because give me what belongs to me and let's free a little bit the veteran. Let's take off some of that responsibility, that burden.
Yeah.
Let's create an environment that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be nice. How do you feel you're being received? I mean, on this newest tour, do you feel like you're getting the attention of some people?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'm busy. I'm busy and I like it. I really like it. You know, my reality in Quebec is very different. Okay, in Quebec, I mean, people basically don't support me or my message or who I am.
Why is that?
The culture is not the same.
Really?
You know, in Quebec, it's the Vandoos who run the place, right? I mean, they create a very hermetic, you know, bubble. And, you know, I didn't make the cut. Don't ask me, in fact. And this is like the crazy part. No one in Quebec really, except for a few, and they became close friends, but no one in Quebec took the time to ask me what my message was and what my purpose was or trying to support me in any way. Huh. The support, I have it in the rest of Canada because I was in the Maritimes also a couple of times. And
right.
So in English or outside Quebec, of course, there is within the population a level of respect and gratitude. Right. Towards the military and the veterans community that really don't exist, doesn't exist in Quebec. Okay, like it's so nice for us to be in Manitoba and have people actually just say to my spouse, who is also a veteran,
right,
thank you for your service.
Yeah.
You never hear that in Quebec.
Really?
So, no.
I don't get that. I don't understand why not. Huh.
I wish I could explain better myself.
Yeah.
But historically speaking, something happened.
Okay.
You know, something happened. Was it since the October crisis of 1972? You know, I don't know.
Right.
But something happened.
Something changed.
And,
yeah.
Oh, God. So my message, I can't really get it out. And you see, even when I give interviews,
right,
it actually makes me mad, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because in Quebec, if you watch all the interviews I've been given, probably like 30 in French now,
right.
40.
Right.
They all want me to make them cry. This is the only thing they want. They want me to, you know, express how difficult it is and blah, right, blah, blah, and, you know, get the Kleenex and let's all cry together because my reality is terrible. And in English, what I really like is the fact that I'm being asked political question because the responsibility is there. So, the perspective of every other provinces except Quebec is really different.
Wow.
And really, outside Quebec, I have really friends and allies. I'm being heard.
Yeah.
and I'm being welcome also, and people want to hear me talk about PTSD and caregiving and the political situation, but also from a human perspective, you know. I cannot change people's reality, but I can really help them, you know, make that next step.
Yeah. Dad, don't stop. Yeah, please don't stop talking. We need you to do. We need you to do this work. You know, we need you to.
You know, I believe in everyone's responsibility.
Yeah.
Okay, I believe that if you are wounded, you really have the responsibility to empower yourself regarding your own wounds.
Right.
And be proactive. Hmm. And I know it's difficult.
Yeah.
Okay, but there's only one step that has to be done, and it's the next step.
Right. Yeah, that's and the way to put it. Thing. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You go through this, you go through your healing process one day at a time, one person at a time, one battle at a time, and one opportunity at a time.
Right.
But you have to make it happen at some level. So. Yeah. If you never see a psychologist and you don't, you know, make the effort, you're not helping yourself.
Hmm.
And if you're not helping yourself, you're not helping anybody else.
No.
But it's also true for a caregiver.
Yeah.
A caregiver has the responsibility to educate themselves in order to be able to recognize what is paranoia? What is hypervigilance? And also to learn.
Yeah.
How to properly make things, if not better, at least easier. Because this is what's important at the end of the day. If the wounded or the caregiver feels alone, there's nothing worse than feeling that the person you love the most on the planet doesn't get you, doesn't understand you.
Yeah, that's a tough feeling.
And there's nothing more difficult than not knowing how to talk.
Yeah.
What words to use. Sometimes the power of love is not enough.
Yeah, you're right.
And this is what people need to realize. You need the love, but you need to educate yourself. You need to acknowledge your responsibility towards the person who's suffering and towards yourself in order to protect yourself from the collateral damage and in order to protect the wounded one from suffering even more.
Right. What, you're in Manitoba now, Jenny. What is your plan? Because how long is this tour going?
Well, in total, it should last about 6 weeks. So I'm in two weeks and a half now, I think.
Right.
So there's a few days left in Manitoba, and then it's going to be Saskatchewan for 3 weeks approximately. So it's going to be Prince Albert, Regina, Saskatchewan, Saskatoon,
right,
where already I have meetings planned, but also I always keep a little of my agenda open for those spontaneous, you know, calls. Hey, you're in the area. Can we go for a coffee? Or could you meet us, a bunch of friends, to talk about PTSD? So
right.
This is what I do. Boots on the ground.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we need. Is there somewhere that people can go and see, like, where you're going to be? Or is there some way that, you know, people can get this information? If they want to know, like, where you're going next or where you're going to be?
Yes, although I'll tell you that for the past 4 years, I mean, since I started the advocacy, I'm discreet. I'm discreet. I don't talk a lot publicly,
right,
about who I meet because, of course,
right,
I'm
yeah,
politically involved too, right?
Right.
But also, I felt so alone, okay, because as I said, I'm a Quebecer, I have pink hair, I have tattoos, piercings, I mean,
yeah,
I'm everything, you know, that is disturbing to a lot of people. So I had to learn and do my thing and be coherent with my heart.
Right.
So this being said, through the social media, people will be able to find me, Jenny Mignot on Facebook, for instance.
Okay.
And I indicate, you know, a few information. For instance, I wrote, I believe it's yesterday, that I would be in Brandon, Manitoba, okay, next Monday and Tuesday.
Right.
So people know me and follow me, sort of.
So that's...
And other than that...
Sorry, go ahead, Jenny. Go ahead.
Other than that, already, as I said, I'm already fairly booked, sort of.
Yeah.
And I like those one-on-one meetings.
Right.
I really like those because it allows me to understand even deeper or to talk more specifically about a situation. You know, sometimes people in front of others don't talk easily.
Right. That's right.
And, you know.
So people can go on, people can find you on Facebook. So it's Jenny, so that's JennyMignault. Mignault.
You're good. Yes, that's right. Jenny
Perfect.
Mignault.
My French teacher in high school will be proud of me right now.
I am proud of you. Great job.
Yeah, Mrs. Mosier, she would love me right now. But, yes, so that's great. People can find you there. Please, and I would... Anybody that's listening, please do that. Look you up. That would be awesome. You're doing great work. As I said, we have a lot of work left to do in all aspects of this mental health issue, and you're doing very important work. I want to ask you a question before you go, Jenny, and my question to you is this. If there's somebody listening right now who is a caregiver to somebody who is struggling, and they were in front of you, what would you say to them?
I wouldn't need to say a damn word. I could just give them a hug.
Oh, that's awesome. You're the first one that's ever said that. Yeah. Yeah.
You know what? The magic, and there's a sadness into this.
Yeah.
There's really a sadness into this, but there's a twisted magic, sort of. I will always remember the first time I talked to a fellow vet spouse. You understand? When you think you're all alone and you're going through something that you can't make sense of,
right,
and suddenly you meet someone who speaks the same damn language.
Right.
And you understand, and you feel understood, and there's a magic there. Just people need to know that they're not alone. Mm. There's some help out there. Go get it. Just make the next step.
Yeah.
That's all you need. Love yourself, love the person you're with, and love your children.
Mm.
The forgotten of the forgotten, do right. The next step.
Mm. Well said, Jenny. Listen, I don't want to leave anybody hanging, because I was almost going to. How is your ex-husband doing now?
You know what? He's doing great. Of course, after our divorce, I mean, he's been like, it was tough for him.
Right.
But now he's really empowered. He's the man that I always knew he was.
I'm so happy to hear that. That's awesome.
I'm proud of him, really. He's my best friend still.
Wow. There's not many people that can say that.
No. Nope.
In your situation. What? Nope. And how are you doing? How would you say you're doing?
You know what? I'm doing much better. It took me time to heal myself. Mm. And now I'm in a good place and I protect myself. I mean, you understand from all the activity and so on. So, of course, we tour and I talk to a lot of people and I listen a lot. But I also take time with my spouse. Because we need to protect our bubble and our relationship. This is the priority.
Right.
So when you're in a good place yourself, you can help others. And this is the message I want to carry on.
It's a good message. It's an important message. Jenny, you are awesome. You are a special human being.
Thank you, Sean.
Oh, well.
I'm not special. Welcome. I'm just a caregiver and I'm just a vet spouse. We're all that magic. We're all that strong. And we're all that beautiful inside. We have so much to give.
We do.
Yeah.
But I'm not gonna let you get off the hook though. You're special. You're awesome. You're doing great work that a lot of people can't do or just haven't made the decision to do yet. We need people like you to drag other people in, you know, to let the other people know it's okay and that they can do this. And sometimes people need to see an example of someone doing something to know it's okay for them to do it themselves. And
you know what?
I think you're one of
sometimes
those
people. Sometimes you don't have the permission to talk.
Yeah.
And okay.
That's
so
what you could be giving people, right? You give me a lot of people that.
Yeah.
You know, so I hope, you know, if anybody listening to this, it's my pleasure. I am so happy I got to talk to you. Anybody listening that can get out and see you, you know, I hope they do that, and I hope they look you up, and I hope that I hear more about you, you know, all through social media and some, you know, doing good work and furthering this movement for veterans and for, you know, for veterans specifically, which branches out to the first responder world, which branches out to the human world. It's a human problem.
You got it.
You know, it just is. But thank you for taking the time to talk to me, Jenny. And anything we can ever do, if you're doing anything else or want to talk about something else, just let me know. And I love what you're doing, and thank you for doing it.
Thank you so much, Sean.
No, it's my,
thank you.
It's my pleasure.
Now my shift is finally over. I got to deal with what's mine.
Thank you to Jenny for taking the time to tell us her story and tell us about her mission. Really important. It is, again, a really substantial piece to this puzzle. Caregivers. Veterans, obviously, with PTSD and other mental illnesses, and the loved ones who care for them and what they go through and the support that they need. This issue, as I've said before, rings a personal note for me, as I still carry the guilt and think every day about what my family, specifically my wife and daughter, went through when I got sick. They had to deal with a version of me that was not very nice. Not very nice to be around. Angry. Not engaged. Certainly not mindful. Not present. It wasn't fun. It was really bad. So I think about it often. Thanks again, Jenny. Okay, so here's what we're doing right now. We're going to go into 12 messages of support from an A-list. All my guests are on the A-list. A-list of superstars in this community. Starting with Natalie Harris. Needs no introduction. Superstar. Jamie McWhorter, my brother from Tema and from PTSD Buddies. Sean Taylor from I've Got Your Back 911. Michael Landsberg from TSN and from Sick Not Weak. Theo Fleury, former NHL player, as well as another former NHL player, Clint Malarchuk. Bill Rusk from Badge of Life Canada. Sid Gravel, the godfather of peer support in Canada. My good buddy Kevin Davison, who has been my friend for 30 years. Tema brother as well, and has graciously lended us his fantastic song that he co-wrote and recently won an East Coast Music Award for Video of the Year, When Those Sirens Are Gone. Then we have my good friend, paramedic, phenomenal artist, Teresa Coulter. Then my brother from Project Trauma Support, firefighter Jason Bird. And we're going to end it off strong with the anchor, the man, Vince Savoia. They're going to be coming at you rapidly, one right after another. Let's do it.
Yeah.
I mean, before we wrap things up, is there anything you'd like to say to any first responders that are listening that are struggling or wondering about getting help or don't feel like they... you know, they have anybody to talk to,
yeah.
Or, you know, is there anything you'd like to say to them?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. You know, I know so much what the darkness feels like that you're in right now. But if there is hope in recovery, I'm telling you, I'm proof of it. I thought of suicide every second of every day at my sickest, and I think I stopped counting how many hospital stays I had in the mental health unit.
and I'm fighting for you. I know financially and socially that this illness really affects and puts such hardships on you. And just please hang in there, reach out. I know stigma is still very prevalent, but when I started talking, if you find someone who's safe to talk to and you trust, that's when stigma will fall away from you. And even if you don't know me, you can email me and I'll absolutely be there to, you know, send an encouraging word at the least. But
very well
don't
said.
Give up.
Very well
yeah.
said. You know what, Natalie, I think you're awesome.
Jamie, if you had to, in closing, if you had to give a message to first responders that are listening to this, what would it be?
Don't stop fighting. I know, I know there's people out there who are suffering in silence. They're not talking to anybody, and that's a dead end road. You can't just keep. You'll eat yourself alive. You got to talk to somebody. You got to get a PTSD buddy. I mean, I lived in fear for a long time, but I mean, here I am. I went from hiding in my basement in 2007, hiding in my basement in the darkness, like from hiding from the world, to standing on stage talking to over 1,000 people about PTSD. I'm living proof that you can beat it. And at the worst, you can learn to live with it. I mean, I know what my PTSD is still there. It's going to be there forever. I should rephrase that. You don't really beat it. You learn to live with it, though.
Right.
It is possible.
Absolutely. That's a perfect message. I think, you know, people need to hear that. Sean, if you were to, you know, if you had a message for the first responders in this country who may be struggling with PTSD or, you know, aren't thankfully struggling right now, but may face it in the future, do you have a message for them?
You know what? I think the biggest thing, Sean, is the fact that, you know, you got to look at this. This is a new era. This isn't the old boys club where you're not allowed to talk about it anymore.
Right.
And, you know, because that just shows weakness. We're in a new era now where this has now come to the forefront and people are actually being able to talk about it. You know that you're not alone. Reach out to somebody, speak to one of your peers. You know, you're seeing different things implemented in different services now that this movement is going on and the changes are being made from a provincial level to hopefully a federal level. But you have to speak to people. You got to reach out because there is light at the end of the tunnel. People can persevere. Just, you know, you're not alone. I think that's the biggest thing. You're not alone. You got to talk.
If you were to give a statement, you know, right now to people who are struggling with mental health, who feel they can't talk or feel like they're alone, if you were to tell them one thing, what would it be?
I would tell them, and this is not something I have not thought about, I would tell them that sharing is an acquired skill, that if you've never done it before and if you've been afraid to do it and if you've kept it inside, you're not very good at it. And it's so intimidating. And it's so scary, the thought of you saying these words, I'm suffering from depression. But if you do it once, I promise you that the second time will be just a little bit easier. And within a certain amount of time, you will be more comfortable with it. Because if you are keeping it to yourself, that means you have bought into the stigma. And the best way to prove to yourself that you no longer believe the stigma is to share and find out that people are responsive, and especially if you do it within a protective community like Sick Not Weak. If you don't share, there is never going to be help. And when you keep this as a secret, you send a message to yourself that somehow you are to blame. You are not to blame. Nobody is to blame for their mental illness any more than people. I mean, we're less to blame for our mental illness than some people who have heart disease, who maybe are obese, right? I mean, they have risk factors. I have no risk factors for depression. It just hit me. So teach yourself not to be proud of your illness, because that sounds ridiculous, but not to be ashamed of it. And you best do that by sharing just a little bit at a time.
Wow. That's awesome, Michael.
For the people that are going to listen to this podcast that are still struggling, what I say is, you know, don't quit before the miracle.
Huh, that's fantastic. Yeah, it's cool.
Because I remember those days very well, where there was no solutions, there was no answers, there was nothing. All I had was a willingness, and I had a little bit of hope left. And so I tried to build every single day something positive.
Right.
Which meant if I was depressed, is get your ass off the couch and do something. You know, I love to play golf, and golf was a huge part of helping me get through, you know, some dark times in my life and depression and all those things, and or find that friend and call him and say, hey, I'm sitting on my couch and I'm not doing well. Can you come and grab me and let's go do something?
Clint, before we go, I just want, would you have a message for anybody that may be listening that may be struggling right now with some mental illness and not knowing what to do?
Oh, absolutely. I think the first thing is accept that you're injured mentally or maybe going through a sickness, and mental and emotional, even spiritually, but you're not weak. You're injured or sick, and that you can be happy and healthy and productive and actually really love life.
Right.
You know, you just have to get, you know, accept it and get the help. And don't stop at one doctor. If that doesn't help, go to another. It took me, and we're a lot better now with our clinical medical side of things, but I had a long trial of different medications, and today it's not quite as tough. So don't give up and keep, you can be happy and healthy. That is a given.
That's great. Perfect words, Clint. If you could say something to the first responders listening who may be struggling with PTSD right now and not really sure what to do or just are still in that dark place, what would you say to them?
Well, I'd tell them, first of all, that they're not alone, and that they simply need to, there's resources available to reach out to, and there's lots of good people out there to help you. That's what one of the things that our website's all about, and we, with regards to all the people involved with Badge of Life Canada, we call it a pay it forward approach. Everyone.
Sid, before I let you go, I just want to know if you could say something to any listeners that maybe are struggling with right now with mental illness or PTSD in particular. If you could say something to them, what would it be?
Yeah, what I would say is that, you know, yes, it hurts. There's no two ways about it, and that cannot be taken away from what you're going through, but you need to really believe that in all the efforts that you put to therapy and to use of medicines, if that's what you're doing, to your family and to your loved ones and those who really care, if you lean on them, because you can't do this by yourself, things will get better. I truly believe that things do get better when we recognize that this is something that we can't do by ourselves. It only gets difficult when we think we can do it by ourselves.
So, Kevin, before I let you go, I'm going to do the same thing I do with all my guests. So, perfect. If you could say something to somebody who's listening to this podcast who might be struggling, whether it be with mental health or other, you know, life issues that we all go through and may not be seeing that light at the end of the tunnel right now, if you encountered them, what would you say to them?
One thing I will say, and I do a lot of talks with on PTSD and through mental health, or you know, like I say, in Texas, I'm going to be a keynote speaker there, and you know, the thing I always end with is, you know, everybody to remember that it's not weak to go see somebody. It's not weak to just go and say, look, I've got an issue going on here. It's the strongest thing you're ever going to do in your entire life is to get that help and to ask. And, you know, it's a strength that we all need. And, I certainly encourage anybody that, you know, is going through any type of, you know, you're right, not even mental health. If there's things going on, I mean, I've been through divorce and it's not fun. And, you know, I'm like you too. I've never been diagnosed with PTSD, but I'm the same way. Like when you talk about the fuzzy head and trying to get your thoughts in order. You know, we've been through a lot of stuff over the years, and it is hard. It's hard for me to do that as well. I totally relate to what you're saying.
Yeah.
So, you know, reach out and talk to somebody, even if it's not a doctor for the first little bit. It might be just a colleague or a friend. Mm. You know, let somebody know so they can reach out and help you.
Well said, brother. Thank you for that. You know what I'm going to ask you next. So, if there's people listening to this podcast, or if you encountered somebody that, you know, was in the dark place that You know what that feels like. I know what that feels like. I still battle it from time to time. If you could say something to those people or that person, what would you say?
You really put me on the spot here.
I should not have put you on the spot. You knew this was coming.
I totally knew this was coming, but I still feel like, and I listened to all of your things, and I was like, oh, I have such a great idea. I should write that down in case I ever get to talk to him. Honestly, to tell you the truth,
yep.
I think the first step to healing is asking for help. And as the helper, it's so hard to see us ourselves in a situation of needing help because we're the fixers, right?
That's right.
And we wear that armor and we think that the world doesn't know that we're just so full of toxic sludge inside. So I think even if your words are disjointed and you don't know how to explain anything or, you know, just ask for help. There's a lot of resiliency and strength and courage that it takes, but it's the first step to healing. And it can come at any time, I think. Wherever you are on your journey, don't do it alone. Mm. You're not alone. There's so many people that care.
Well said.
If you could give a message to somebody listening who is struggling right now, what would you say to them?
I would say that you can't give up. There is a way out. You may not be there yet, but you will get there. And you have to reach out and connect with anybody and everyone that you can. You got to stop basically allowing other people to hurt you with a poor understanding of mental illness.
Right.
You know, so what I'm saying is, You need to open up with people. Like, a lot of people haven't even told their family members what they're going through.
Mm.
Well, open up and realize that they're going to be pretty confused with what you're about to tell them. You need to accept it. That's the only way that a family member or a friend or, you know, a doctor can actually understand and start to help you.
Mm.
So that's number one. If anybody's listening that may be on the other side of things, or you know what, each and every one of us can do this, and that is connecting with other people, connecting with those that are suffering. So often I hear, I don't know what to say. I know Jason Bird is suffering like a severe mental illness, but I don't know what to say. I don't know what to text.
Right.
The truth is, say what you always said. Text what you always texted.
Yeah, that's right.
Don't stop. Don't stop. You know, you may not get back what you wanted. You know, you may get Sean pushing you away.
Mm.
But people. So what I'm getting to is that you can't give up, and the people around you cannot give up. The only way that I've survived is because of my family and friends and the team of doctors. They're the ones that have kept me alive.
Yeah.
So without those, without all of that,
yeah,
I wouldn't be here today. So
Well, thank you for those words. Vince, if there's someone listening that is struggling right now, what would you say to them?
This may sound cliche, but honestly, you are not alone. There are a ton. There are many first responders across this country who are willing to help. And all you really need to do is to just reach out and ask for that help.
You have to know, after listening to those messages, that you are not alone. You're part of a huge community that, although has not had the same experiences as you, is dealing with the same symptoms as you, trying to muddle through the darkness like you. So please, keep that in mind always. And you know what? I'm going to give you a 13th. I'm going to give you a message from me. It's going to be twofold. First, I want to send a message to those of you who are listening who are not struggling right now. And it's okay to be okay. Here's what I want to say to you. Reach out to somebody. Make a pact with them, somebody you trust. And that is that if you are ever feeling down, like you have nowhere to turn, that you will reach out to them before making any decisions about anything. And that you will allow them time to get back to you and to talk to you before doing or deciding on anything. Make that pact. Could be your partner, you know, a close friend, anybody that you trust and that you know will follow through on the commitment. Do that. If you are struggling right now, just reach out to somebody. And that's not easy. That's really, really, really hard. Reach out to somebody that you trust. And do not make any decisions. Don't do anything. Don't decide anything until you hear back from that person or talk to somebody. If all else fails, message me. You can get me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, email, tematalks@tema.ca. I don't mind. Do it. And if you're somebody listening that think that somebody you care about is having trouble, reach out to them first. Sometimes that 1,000-pound phone might just be too heavy. And you need to take the first step and show them the open door. Okay? You can do it. I know you can. Before we go, I want to tell you about a really cool organization who has some events going on. The Paramedic Ride is a not-for-profit organization dedicated to strengthening the paramedic community. They're raising funds in support of the Canadian Paramedic Memorial Foundation. And the foundation is constructing a monument in the nation's capital, in Ottawa, to commemorate those paramedics who have lost their lives in the line of duty. This important monument will be a place where family, friends, and colleagues can remember their loved ones and honor the dedication and sacrifice of all Canadian paramedics who have lost their lives. All right, and they hope you can join them. What they do is they host cycling tours, and I'm going to tell you right now what they have coming up. Let's just see here. So, they're going to be in Alberta, August 24th to the 26th. They're going to be in Quebec, September 14th to 17th. Ontario, September 14th to 17th as well. Look them up at paramedicride.ca. Check out all the events and all the great people that are part of this organization. Thank you to everybody who keeps supporting this podcast. Check it out. The Mental Health News Radio Network, your home for Tema Talks and 30 plus other shows all dealing with different aspects of mental health. Get a hold of me on social media, any one of the social media platforms. You're going to find a Tema Talks account, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. We're there. Please follow us. Engage with us. We need you. Please. Okay. Keep enjoying your summer. You're going to hear from me in August. Until then, take care of yourself and each other. More love, less judgment.
'Cause we ain't superheroes, we're just ordinary people trying to make a difference and the first on every scene. And it's a heavy, heavy burden to carry.